If someone had actually designed this feature of the criminal justice system to entrap the poor, you couldn't do better than what happened to Haley Wood from Alabama. Here in the documentary To Prison for Poverty, she tells the story of how a $41 traffic ticket became a more than $300 debt and possible prison term.
Here is the actual ticket I got. I paid $10, fees $35, and then fine balance $41. The fine has not been touched, not one time, all the money I've paid. And see this paper right here, it says if you fail to appear, a warrant will be issued for your arrest.
It costs money to get justice, and courts and collection companies charge fees and collect fines from rich and poor alike. But for the poor, pay-for-use fees can be so onerous that going to jail may be the only way to get out from under a debt. Jail time, even though there has been no criminal conviction. It took a sociologist to show the national scale of this problem. In her book, A Pound of Flesh, Monetary Sanctions as Punishment for the Poor, Alexis Harris says, in this system, there are no appeals and no recourse for defendants. The whole system, she says, is like a Charles Dickens debtor's prison nightmare.
Since the inception of the criminal justice system in the United States, we've always used fines to punish people. But increasingly, since the 90s and 2000s, state legislators have added additional fees. And the fees are solely meant to recoup costs associated with processing defendants through the court system, for the cost of their public defense, for the cost of their prosecution, for the cost of court paperwork, even for the cost to house them a daily rate in jail or in prison.
Have courts ruled that these fees are valid, that they don't constitute a penalty without due process?
Well, so there have been different case law at the state level and at the United States Supreme Court that have established that this is allowable, that you can impose costs, particularly the cost of the public defender has been challenged. But the courts have found that as long as the cost is imposed after conviction, then the debt to the defendant for the cost of the public defense does not interfere with the quality of defense. There's been cases, Bearden v. Georgia, that established this concept of willful nonpayment. However, there were no clear criteria provided to judges that mandated how judges would establish this. So what has happened is some judges that I've observed in Washington State look at the women's manicures and ask them how much they spend on their manicures, ask people how much they spent on cigarettes, how much they spent on their tattoos, and say, you know, you spent this money on sort of your body, and you could have spent it on your legal financial obligations. So the problem is that the protections aren't clear enough. They're too ambiguous for judges to loosely interpret them and lead to the incarceration of poor people.
And we should note that these kinds of questions about, well, what did you spend on cable TV or what did you spend on recreation are deliberately not asked in the welfare office, that basically there's an understanding that people have their own lives and can make their own decisions. How come that can be asked openly in the courts?
It's because these state statutes are so loosely determined. I think regular people who have no contact with the criminal justice system would be shocked to see how much discretion on the ground level courts have, judges have, to manage the lives, particularly the lives of poor people who come before them.
Can you describe how I might find myself caught in a net that results in increasing debt and increasing restriction of freedom all the way to the point where I might actually get incarcerated?
Right. Common example of myself. Several years ago, I was pulled over by a very nice police officer for speeding. I hadn't had a ticket in the prior 7 years. And so he said, you can apply online for this deferred fining. You have to pay for it in addition to the fine of the ticket. But if you don't get a ticket for another year, then it won't affect your insurance rates. So, you know, I'm a professor. I had the money. I went to pay for both the ticket and to enter into this deferred process. Had I not had that money, I might have not paid my ticket, and then I would have lost my driver's license. The next time I was pulled over, I would be arrested for driving with a suspended license. And this is a common practice in Washington that many, many people, particularly people who are poor, that don't have the ability to pay traffic tickets, will result in incarceration in jail.
Is it the case that people are incarcerated because they can't pay a $35 a month fee or a payment towards a fee?
Oh, definitely. That people have set a $20, $30, $50 minimum monthly payment, but they can't pay it. And even people who are unemployed or who receive disability insurance, they're told that they have to pay something. Can you ask your mom for the money? Can you, you know, ask your employer for money? You know, I sat in this one public collections unit, and this one young man came and said he didn't have money for his payment, but he was getting his educational loan in the next couple of weeks. And they said, make sure you come and make your payment when you get that check.
So the court took the educational loan?
Yes. Yes. They take money out of disability payments. I saw a man come to that window saying there was a problem, and I guess he was $100 short for making the payment for his wife. He said his wife was disabled, and it was around Christmas. And they said, well, when can you anticipate paying this $100? He said, I'll get my bonus on the 26th. And they said, well, make sure you come and pay that. And he said, they won't come knocking, meaning they won't come knocking on my door to take her to jail. And the clerk said, no, they shouldn't, but make sure you keep that receipt and show you made a payment. So we literally have people walking around on the street carrying their receipts, hoping that they will not be picked up by the police if stopped and taken to jail.
Now, you might think in this situation that, you know, somebody's making money hands over fist here, that this is keeping the taxes down in the state of Washington, that it's paying for salaries of public workers or something. Is this a valid revenue source, even though it looks good to legislators who vote these fees in?
So this is the rhetoric. This is what clerks' offices will say in any state that you go to. But I bet that you cannot find one clerk in the United States that can show you that this is cost effective, that they cannot look at all of the amount of money that they spend for their public collection units, for the arresting of non-payment, for the incarceration of non-payers, and contrast that with the amount of money they recoup. They cannot account for this practice financially. So I really argue that this is an inefficient process in terms of raising money for the criminal justice system. It's ineffective, and it's real unethical treatment of poor people in our society. I'd like to say the vast majority of us have received speeding tickets. So I'd like to think that I'm not that different. So only wealthy people can speed, or only wealthy people can make mistakes in society. Is that the type of America we have? But the bottom line is that it's unethical treatment of poor people to saddle them with this debt, to create a very different experience of punishment for poor people versus wealthy people in society, and not allow them to ever atone or redeem themselves in society.
Alexis Harris, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Alexis Harris is a sociologist at the University of Washington and author of A Pound of Flesh, Monetary Sanctions as Punishment for the Poor.